Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Broverwatch podcast. My name is Adam Cook, and this week we are not joined by Calder Amos Wood. He's actually on vacation. Instead, we have Totally Drunk here. Thank you for joining us today. Appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely, no problem. Happy to be here. You know, it's been kind of a busy week already. It's a double podcast day, but I'm always here to help out. And, you know, it's like I'm an honorary Canadian for one day, so I'm sure Edinar is going to give me a lot of flack for that tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, you can always check Totally Drunk out on all of his podcasts. We'll leave all the links in the description below. So it's an honor to have you on this week on the podcast. Just to start things off, the first week of Overwatch League is already over. It kind of came and went very, very quickly. Were you able to catch every match?
I was. The only ones that I didn't catch live were the last two games on Friday, because Friday's like my one day where I'm actually out and being social. Otherwise, it's pretty much full-time Overwatch content creation and or Overwatch League, and you know, it just works out that way.
Yeah. I think I wasn't able to catch, I hate to say it since you're wearing the jersey, I wasn't able to catch the full Vancouver game, which was a bummer, but that was the only one that I wasn't able to catch. All the other games, well, not all the other games were good. There were a couple, there was one stinker in there. There was one that I guess we'll talk about a bit later that I didn't think was a good game, especially as an Outlaws fan, which we'll get into. But yeah, I think that I thought that it might get a bit stale because it's so much goats, but somehow they managed to keep it very, very entertaining throughout the whole week. So I'm just going to pull up the schedule here and we'll briefly touch on some of the games. We don't have to touch on all of them, although we should touch on the first game, Philly versus London. Did that go the way you thought it was going to go?
Okay, so there's been a lot of talk kind of going into the season about how London is doing in the new meta. You know, a lot of the scrim talk isn't always going to come to fruition onto the stage. So for me, I was surprised. But as soon as I saw London lose to Fusion, I was like, oh, crap. They face Paris next. And I knew that Paris is just going to come out running 3-3, which has been a staple of Europe for a long time, dating all the way back to 2016 with Ninjas in Pajamas. Yeah. So as soon as they lost to Philadelphia, I was like, London's going to fall 0-2, and all the power rankings across the board within the community are going to look drastically different, which people are going to be finding out here within the next couple of days for sure.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of teams, people like put the power rankings in based on their star DPS players, but all of those players are now playing Brig and Zarya, which some are doing quite well on, but London is very DPS centric. So yeah, the fact that they lost to Philly, honestly, it didn't surprise me because it could have gone either way, but it surprised me that it was a 3-1. I thought it was for sure going to go to a map 5, but yeah, that one was very good. I think Philly, honestly, I don't know what your power rankings are at right now.
I actually have them on hand.
Ooh.
after week 1, I actually have them second.
Okay.
I want to say we had him like 5th or 6th, kind of like going into the season start.
All right. Yeah, I think, I forget where we had them at. I think we had them also 2nd. Or no, we had them 3rd. We had them 3rd. But they're looking great because they have the DPS core, but then they also have the healing. And Sato kind of came out, like he's always been good, but he came out of nowhere and really impressed me this week. So I think Philly's gonna, especially with their upcoming matches, they're definitely making stage 1 playoffs.
Oh yeah.
So they're looking good. And then New York versus Boston, I mean, people always underestimate Boston, I guess. Definitely this time too. Although I'm hearing a lot of people say that they're not as impressed with New York as they thought they would be, which I guess I kind of am too, because they lost a map to Boston and lost a map to Washington. But I mean, they're still NYXL, so I think they'll...
Here's the thing about that. You know, we see a lot of these Korean teams, and they do, in fact, bleed. I mean, we're not in the Korean Overlord meta anymore like it was in years past. So for me, I actually think that they were one of the best-looking GOATS team, or 3-3 teams, because I know they're trying to stay away from that terminology on the broadcast, which will probably transition to the podcast scene. But we got to see, like, a lot of Sombra play from NYXL, which... You know, we saw a ton of Sombra really across the board, but like their Sombra honestly looked like it was, you know, top two within the league. And while we didn't necessarily get to see like Sabiobi at all, we didn't really get to see Pine or Flower, the core that they have, regardless of what meta we're in, they're able to like flex and fluctuate to, you know, kind of like morph into whatever they need to run. So, you know, if we're going to enter double sniper compositions, well, they have four snipers on their roster, so like that's not an issue. But I will say, like, the 3-3 play kind of across the board at times was very shaky, but that was not the case for New York Excelsior. So I don't really doubt where they are right now as a team, but you know, some people are just kind of looking at it like, well, it's New York, so eventually they're just gonna kind of like try to dictate their own thing, and you know, it's going to blow up kind of like it did in Stage 4 last year, but I don't think it's going to happen this year.
Yeah, I think the lost map to Boston wasn't because New York was doing poorly. I think it's just Fusion's kind of, I don't know, made his entrance into the league. He was one of the standout players that I had written down. I mean, we made our power rankings before he was taken off the two-way and like just signed as a normal tank. If we knew that beforehand, we probably would have put Boston up there a bit more because his tank plays great. The only weakness I see for them is once teams figure out how Fusions works, then that's a huge crack in Boston. So, but right now their 3-3 is very, very good. And having Color Hex back, or not back because he hasn't been there yet, but having Color Hex in the mix will spice things up a bit too. Then Seoul versus Gladiators, it went how I expected personally.
Can't say the same about the other Seoul game.
No. That was probably one of my favorite matches to watch, which we'll get to. But yeah, Seoul versus Gladiators, I thought it would be close, and it was pretty close, but I think Gladiators might have been a bit surprised by how good Seoul was, because they looked a lot better later in the week. But yeah, it was Seoul... Who was it, sorry? Michelle looked very good.
Right. Yeah, Michelle was starting over Zunba, and we also got to see a lot of Jexa over Toby in this case. Which were both, like, some of the things that we've been kind of hearing about in regards to, like, the scrim talks. And at the same, like, as a Seoul fan, I was a little disappointed that it was Munchkin that was on Brigitte duty, primarily just because, well, we already kind of got to see what his Zarya was like during that Pacific Showdown or Showmatch or whatever the heck they called it, Pacific Challenge against Guangzhou Charge. So I was kind of expecting Munchkin to be playing the Zarya over Fleta, and for Fleta to be playing the Brigitte role. But all in all, like, I can't say that I was, like, taken back by either one of their performances, because both of them have looked really good. And I'm happy to say, like, we did actually see Fischer pretty much starting throughout all of their maps. So I know there was some talk about, well, Fischer hasn't really been with the team. You know, we'll probably be seeing, you know, a different composition there, but that was not the case. My major concern, though, was initially when Seoul came out, they were trying to run, like, that DPS-heavy composition, and I was like, okay, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
You know, you can have a lot of faith in Fleta now that they have Fischer on the main tank line, so he's going to be opening up a lot of space. But then it kind of, like, went into the scene where Ryu Jaehan kept wanting to run Ana, and then they would just, like, forego running Zenyatta in, like, the Zen 3-3 compositions, and it was not working. So it was definitely shaky at the start, but across the board, you know, they looked pretty good, and then, you know, AKM kind of happened on Kane's Row in that second series, so that was a rough one.
Yeah. I was tweeting during that match, and was giving, or not during that match, during that day, and gave my MVPs for each game. And I started saying, and because it was mid-match, so I said, right now it's effect, and then AKM came on and just absolutely destroyed. It was so nice to see a Widow compilation, but a Widow highlight, because we haven't seen one of those in so long, and especially with how much crap that everybody gives AKM once in a while, it was nice to see him pop off a little bit.
Giving him crap? What are you talking about? He had a whole meme based off of his Genji performance, which yeah. he fully embraced. So I'm sure if he missed a lot of those shots and it ended up costing to field the series, he would have embraced that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I feel like we should touch on Shanghai, still winless. Their first match, they didn't have Gamzu at all, but then their second one they did, and still the same result. Do you think that Shanghai will get a win this season?
Absolutely. It's okay, just, yeah. I was not actually expecting Gamzu to play at all this week, just because he was such a late addition, so we know he hasn't really been practicing with the team. So for him to roll out, even in that second game, I was a little bit taken off guard by. So really, at the end of the day, a lot of this is just going to boil down to being able to build that synergy on the front line. We got to see a little bit of Kagiri running like solo tank with the Wrecking Ball. They were running, you know, triple DPS compositions.
Yeah.
Which honestly was pretty true about all the Chinese teams in week one. So they've kind of like brought their own flair kind of to the Overwatch League to varying degrees of success. So I'm really anxious to kind of see how that is going to evolve over time. But talking about Shanghai, DM was an absolute madman in week one, and I cannot wait for that Carpe showdown with DM when Fusion go up against the Dragons. So I know it's early, the synergy is not quite there, but the Dragons are definitely going to win. But you know, it's the Overwatch community, you know, they just see the results, they roll their eyes, and then they continue the meme of 0-42, which it's up now too, but it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, agreed. Shanghai didn't look bad at all. They looked quite good, and like you said, Diem was doing fantastic. I thought Gagiri, a lot of people were wondering whether Gagiri would even play, even with Fearless being gone. But I thought that she actually quite impressed me on Wrecking Ball. Yeah, I think Shanghai for sure is going to get a win. It's just, you got to continue the meme.
The other thing, too, is kind of like going into the season, too, before we knew about the Gamzu trade, was they were talking about Yunjin coming in and playing main tank with Kagiri being the off-tank player, and we actually didn't get to see that look at all in their first game. So I was kind of like surprised by that, just because he had been competing as a main tank in the past on WNV Korea over in Contenders, and we didn't get to see it. So I don't know if that was like a last-minute decision from the coach and stuff, or maybe they just felt better about running the triple DPS compositions, or what the deal was. But now that Gamzu is going to be starting more on a full-time basis at this point, they don't really have to worry about that, and then hopefully they can get Fearless back at some point. But honestly, like, I think between the two, Gamzu is probably going to be the better pick and fit for that team.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about how, because when they announced that Fearless wasn't going to be there, it was kind of like, he wasn't feeling great, he wanted to go back to Korea for a bit. But then some people were saying that it was kind of like 50% that, but it was also like 50% he hadn't been performing too well in scrims. So I wouldn't be surprised if, we rarely see a Fearless, if ever, on stage for Shanghai. Hopefully we see him at some point, because I'd love to see him again. But next we should talk about the match that I dread to even remember, is Houston versus Toronto. As someone who lives close to Toronto but is a Houston fan, the whole thing was horrible. It just wasn't. Toronto looked pretty good, but like they didn't look amazing. And then Houston looked good, and then looked really, really bad. So, what were your thoughts on that match? Because I have a lot of thoughts.
I'm going to say this off the bat. I am not an Outlaws fan by any means. This is a team that I tend to troll the most, and it is for good reason, because here we are, you know, this is kind of like the reverse Philly, where they're not able to actually close out a series, but they still go to Met 5. Yeah. So here's the thing with Houston. You know, I know a lot of people like to, like, pinpoint Rockus, and people feel like Rockus just isn't, you know, where he needs to be on that flex support role. I have no problem with the way that Rockus performed. But, you know, now that we got the player point of views, people are just kind of, like, trying to pinpoint individuals rather than kind of looking at the team effort. Yeah. And I have to say, like, when I look at Houston, their 3-3 composition does not look that good. They are a team that runs the anti-3-3 compositions a lot better, and we didn't even get to really see Dante on the Sombra, which was one of the key things that I was looking for the Outlaws. Why they didn't throw that when Dante really showed the most promising Sombra play in Season 1 is beyond me, but I just feel like a lot of the times with Houston, when you're going for those grab bomb combinations, they're just not setting them up right. They're not getting the shield out of the way, whether it is with some sort of displacement, breaking it, or just charging the Reinhardt out of position. And it seems like more times than not, they just weren't getting any value out of what is one of the more potent combinations within the game. But they're not the only ones who are kind of at fault with that. There are other teams that were certainly there. But the other thing, too, was, while, yes, the support line with Rockus, you know, Rockus did really good, but there were some times where maybe their support alts would come in too late. Sometimes they would even overlap. And at the end of the day, like, you have to kind of look at Mooma and the pressure that he is providing on the front line. And there were times where he was just playing too passive. And in this sort of meta, when you have players like Fusions who are basically coming in and just pressing W nonstop, yeah, or even players like No Smite, who is kind of like the opposite, where he's playing more of a reactive type style of Reinhardt, but is still earning like an Earth Shatter every single fight. You need to be able to measure that aggression and find that sort of middle ground to find success, and it's just not quite there. So at the end of the day, like, I'm really worried about the Outlaws. I feel like this is still going to be a team that is going to be better when Linkser is able to play Hitscan, because that's what we saw the Outlaws at their very best in week one. So right now, I still feel like they're in the bottom like quarter of the league, at least in this current meta. But this is going to be a team that is going to look better when the meta shifts, but right now, you can say that a lot about, like, at least half of the league. So it's dire straits time early on, especially after two gut-wrenching performances like that.
Yeah. There's kind of three points that I think the Outlaws are struggling on. One, they have Dante, like you said, who can kill it on Sombra. And the Outlaws Twitter even the Outlaws Twitter even posted a picture of his stats when he did play Sombra, and it was like, look at how good he is, and all the replies were like, then why don't you use him, because you're barely ever using Dante on the Sombra, which is very effective against 3-3. And he was popping off on all the heroes he played, because Dante's great. So if they put him on the Sombra, that'll help them a lot. Second thing, although people are kind of being a bit too hard on Rockus, I think there were a couple times where he was caught out. I do think that they should play Bonnie, maybe, or Banny. They say both pronunciations in all their videos, but because he did fantastic at the World Cup. He had multiple different highlights on Zen. I don't know. I'm sure they've tested that. I don't know what the reasoning is for not having Bonnie out at all, but I think that's a possibility. And the last thing is, Jake is the better Brig over Linkser. Linkser's definitely the better hit scan and almost every other hero, but from what we've seen, at least so far, Jake has proven to be a better Brig than Linkser, and they kept bringing Linkser in on Brig, and that's when they you know, did the worst. And it's like, I love Linkser, but this isn't his meta. Like, and if they have someone who's more effective, I don't know why they aren't using him.
Yeah, a lot of that is kind of just based off of the flexibility between the two, because Linkser does provide you, like, 5 to 6 different heroes, whereas Jake primarily will have, like, 2 or 3. Yeah. So it's just always having that extra strategy kind of in your back pocket. But yeah, I agree. Like, Jake, at least when it comes to the Brigitte, has looked more promising. And I think Linkser, you know, he's done all right, but, like, being average on that role isn't necessarily going to cut it. Yeah. But I feel like whenever we start to see them run, like, those Protect the McCree compositions, like, with that Orisa and the McCree, you know, we really get to see Linkser, you know, in his element. But outside of that, you know, it just kind of falls flat. So we'll have to keep an eye on it. But I would like to see them at least test the waters with, you know, bringing Jake in a little bit more on that role. But like, if it's anything else, I really just do not want to see Jake DPS in, because yeah. it's too shaky.
Yeah. And before we move on, I just want to quickly mention Boink, because he kind of came out and surprised me a bit, because he was doing pretty consistently well. Last season, he was kind of just like the third wheel to the healing trio, but he really came out and kind of impressed me. So, and Envy on Toronto also impressed me. The fact that he's mostly a tank player, but he was playing DPS very well. So yeah, that was impressive. Now, I say I'm an Outlaws fan, but I'm kind of 50-50 right now, because Atlanta's kind of winning me over. Atlanta kind of pummeled Florida a little bit. Florida, I don't know. It looked like Monty kept saying it. They just looked like they rolled over and died for them.
They have BQB and then nothing else.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And it was strange that Tevik played every map. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're communicating there, but it seemed like they weren't communicating at all. But yeah, they need to figure something out, because that looked bad. It was nice, as someone who wants to cheer for Atlanta, to be like, yay, a 4-0, but it wasn't like... I still didn't know their skill level after that. But yeah, that was kind of a pummel. And then another pummel was San Francisco versus Dallas. Dallas looked very bad in that match.
That was the shock that we've been wanting to see throughout all of season one. Yeah. And like, I know everyone like hypes up the coaching staffs on both of those teams, which for good reason, but to see Shock basically come out in style on field like that was definitely something that kind of set the tone. But Fuel bounced back, so you gotta hand it to them on that. And then Shock themselves also looked pretty shaky in their second series. So a lot of these teams that have played 2 games definitely had a little bit of inconsistency. Because, like, I know for the Dynasty, after they faced the Fuel, I was like, well, it kind of looks like they spent the majority of their time prepping for their series against the Gladiators and then just kind of forgot about the Fuel.
Yeah, that's... Like, a lot of people like to do the whole circle graph thing where it's like, this team beat this team, who beat this team, but they beat the team that beat them or whatever. But, you know, that's not how sports works. It's all strategy, stuff like that. But, yeah, it was definitely just not being prepared for Fuel, thinking that that was an easy grab, probably. Yeah. San Francisco looked great in that match, and they looked great in their match against Gladiators as well, because that was a very close game. But I think Shock remain at the top of the leaderboards. I think Super really impressed me. I thought that I didn't even know if he was going to play. I thought Smurf was going to be in pretty much the whole time, but they seemed to have a really good cycle for, you know, like a revolving door of players coming in and out, and it seemed to flow really well. It wasn't like they were coming in cold. They came in and were just as warmed up as the other players, so I think they've got something good going. I don't know what it is, but it's working.
Yeah, I will say too, on that note, seeing Architect switch over to Anna to kind of like shut down these double tank compositions was something I did not expect, and he was landing a lot of anti-nades, he was getting a ton of sleep, and he put up some pretty sick Anna numbers for someone that we never see on that sort of role. And you know, that's not like the only person that we saw in a different role than normal, because I know, like, even for the Valiant, they had Kuki starting on main support over Custa, which was another huge kind of talking point within the community here whenever that happened. And then we were just like, what's going on right now?
Yeah, it was very strange because Custa is kind of the face of that team. So to not see him at all was, I mean, now that we like hear that it just worked better that way with communicating with Izayaki and stuff like that, it makes sense, but just not seeing him on stage was very strange. So it's good that we got some sort of an explanation for that. Now, we were talking about Chinese teams before, how they run weird things. Chengdu kind of surprised everybody because they were bottom three of pretty much every single power rankings list. And they beat Guangzhou Charge, who, from at least from what Monty said, was like impressing people in scrims. So this was kind of a big surprise.
Well, I mean, that really depends on how much value you put in the scrim bucks compared to stage results.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will say, like, we had Chengdu pretty low. And a lot of that was kind of revolving around the fact that, you know, yes, you know, they did pick up a couple of pieces out of the Miraculous Youngster core, but in some cases, those players haven't been on stage in a year and a half, so we didn't really know quite what to expect. So for them to get the better of the Guangzhou Charge was definitely a surprise, but I do want to point out just the way that that series ended, because they were on Nepal, and, you know, there's a little bit of over-aggression. We saw Graviton Surge come out, that was just caught the Charge by surprise, and the Hunters ended up getting the cleanup there, which was an awesome play, don't get me wrong, but that was completely on Guangzhou messing up.
Yeah.
Not so much the Hunters necessarily being the better team in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... Who was it that did that grav to win the thing? The whole thing? I forget who that was.
You know, I honestly don't know off the top of my head.
Whoever it was won the game, because I don't know whether that was reactionary, whether that was a called out plan. My guess is it was just a reaction. But either way, like you said, that was kind of the winning play because they were losing up till that point.
Right.
So very impressive there. And then Paris also very impressive. Like, we knew that they'd be good at GOATs or 3-3. We knew they'd be good at 3-3, but to beat... Sorry. Oh, I apologize. My computer just freaked out slightly. To beat London was surprising. Even though London lost against Philly, we still assumed that they were one of the top teams. But Paris kind of didn't roll over them, but kind of gave them quite a fight. And Paris is honestly bumped way higher in my power rankings after that game.
Same, and I was really surprised by Ben Best's performance, because that's been a player that, you know, he's been around the tier 2 scene for quite some time, but he doesn't have that like big like team like experience, like at least on stage. So for them to basically put up a good fight against London is a very promising sign, and with as deep of a coach and staff as they have, not to mention they have Hip kind of like on their support line, who was basically like the mastermind of teaching the United Kingdom team how to play 3-3 in the World Cup. I have a lot of stock in Paris to continue this trend, this stage, as long as things stay the same in regards to the meta, which, by the looks of it, is probably going to be true.
Yeah. If the meta ever has a drastic change anytime soon, I think Paris will struggle. I think that Boston will likely struggle. I think most other teams will be fine, but those two teams for sure. It's probably mainly because they have European cores, and Europe, like you said, is very 3-3 heavy. But yeah, for now, it doesn't seem like the meta is going to change anytime soon. Boston and Paris will both do fine. Speaking of underestimating teams, I don't know if this is... We're probably still estimating them at about the right level, but Washington actually took a map against New York, which surprised everybody. But did they really win that map, or did New York kind of give it away?
I mean, a map win over New York for a team that had absolutely zero expectations going into the season, it is still a win in their book.
Yeah.
And I know it's still super early, but this is a very young team, and while I'm not expecting, like, great things from them, like, kind of, like, throughout the season, a lot of this is just going to boil down to what level of consistency we are going to be seeing out of Corey, because he was one of the sign-ins that I was just like, okay, like, he's been pretty shaky in contenders. There's times where he pops off and he looks like one of the better DPS in North America, and then there are times when he's just not even in the discussion. But really across the board, you know, Janez, you know, he did all right. But, you know, New York is just a whole nother beast, and losing to them, there's really no shame in that. So it's kind of hard to, like, kind of see where they're at. But I think it's this week where Justice faced the Spitfire.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that series is definitely going to be more telling on both where Washington is as well as London, just because we've seen London kind of limping into this week after their week one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that a lot of people got a lot of joy out of seeing the kind of hype video beforehand with Wizard Young kind of being like, we're not as bad as everyone says, and New York has, or we're going to beat New York, essentially, and then them not beating New York. But yeah, I agree with you that the London match is going to be significantly more telling, because, you know, even though they did take a map, New York still somewhat easily beat them. So, and New York, to most people, is regarded as the best team, and Washington preseason was regarded as, by most, the worst team.
Yeah, 19-20, usually.
Yeah, so not very telling. A little impressive that they got a map, but they were New York was also playing some weird stuff on Horizon, and I think they were just kind of testing some stuff out and then went, oh, wait, we also have to win. So then they changed it back a little bit. Now, Vancouver's game against Shanghai. This is the one that I didn't catch, so this will mostly be you. How did Vancouver look? Because I know a lot of people were saying they'd be overhyped, they'd be nervous from being on stage. I didn't agree with any of that, because,
right,
you know, they've been on stage for a long time.
Let's dispel the notion of stage fright when it comes to Vancouver Titans and Runaway. A lot of people forget, like, Contenders Korea is played on LAN all of the time, and they've been in Korea since the Apex days, so LAN experience is no issue with them. Really, like, honestly, like, out of all the teams in the Overwatch League at this point, even if you include Season 1, Vancouver probably has the most time played on stage, kind of, like, throughout the Overwatch League, collectively as a team. And going into the season, a lot of us basically expected a similar, trajectory with Vancouver, similar to what we saw with London and New York, because in Stage 1 last year, we saw New York and London really get off to some early success, and then Vancouver just comes out as a pretty quick victory over Shanghai, and we got to see a couple of different looks, but this team has been amazing in the dive meta. They've been dominant in the 3-3 meta, and we got to see a little bit of everything from them. We got to see a little bit of dive. We got to see, you know, the triple tank. And Siemens Su on the Zarya was, I'm not going to say, like, he was on another level compared to most of the other Zaryas in the league in week one. But just based off of the maps that we saw him on, his stats were definitely near the top of the league, whether it was damage, whether it was eliminations. But, you know, it's still really early to tell. But I'm not stressed at all about the hype behind Vancouver. I know a lot of people are kind of, like, rolling their eyes. I know, like, on our Power Rankings video going into the season, everyone's like, I'm getting sick and tired of, like, all the hype behind Vancouver. And it's not like there's, like, this insurmountable amount of hype behind him. It's just the fact that we have higher expectations just due to the fact that they have that built-in synergy already, as opposed to these other teams who are just starting to come together or maybe only have a couple of months together. So we expect good 3-3 out of Vancouver. And my only concern is, the tank line Bumper did okay, but he was very passive. So we saw a lot of the setups being off of the Zarya play for Vancouver and the Brigitte play. So I'm really curious to see like how Bumper is going to do moving forward, because that wasn't his best showing overall. But Titans are where we kind of expected them to be, and I'm really feeling that they are going to be one of the teams competing in the Stage 1 playoffs. And, you know, if there is a meta shift, I'm not too worried about that either.
Yeah. And we'll definitely know where they're at next week, facing Guangzhou, and especially against San Francisco. I think that game, it's the last game of next week, and I think that's probably the match to look forward to next week. Just because, you know, they had quite a handily... that's not the correct word to use. An easy win against Shanghai. They did very well against Shanghai, and San Francisco's been looking very well organized. So, I don't know. That's probably my highlight match of next week, just because it looks like both teams are looking very strong, and that'll be the true test of both teams, honestly. Now, there's only two games I want to touch on left. And the first is Philly versus Atlanta, which went way closer than people expected. Although, as people are watching the VODs back, a lot of people are saying Atlanta got pretty lucky in a lot of situations. And I'd agree with that to an extent. I think a lot of the luck was due to Atlanta taking a risk and then it paying off, much like with Massa, who did fantastic, taking out EQO on the Pharah, and he Massa was Lucio, which was impressive. But yeah, I did not expect it to go to a map 5, and man, I wish that it was an upset, but it was not. What did you think about that match? Any standout players from that match?
My only concern with Atlanta has been the flex supports, because we had Dogman kind of getting picked up last minute for Atlanta, and a lot of us were still on the Kodak hype train following the World Cup. And Dogman ended up playing like 3 times as much play time throughout week 1 as opposed to Kodak. Mm-hmm. When Kodak has been known to be more of the fragger Zenyatta, which, if you watch week 1, you probably saw a lot of Zenyatta in the kill feed. And, you know, I wouldn't even say Jodek was the best-looking Zenyatta player out of week 1.
Yeah.
I think Izayaki was probably the most impressive out of all the Zenyatta players. And this week, it's going to be Violet, because he's coming off of his suspension.
Mm-hmm.
But Dogman was dying early a lot, which is something that we got to see quite a bit on Atlanta Academy. So I don't know quite where to put them. Like, I thought it was amazing that they were able to contend with someone that we feel like is going to be championship material, you know, whether it's state, you know, stage finals or season playoffs. But a lot of what Atlanta's doing is just going to be built off of DeFrance tracking on the Zarya, which was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you know, the Torbjorn stuff is really cheeky fun, and I have to say, like, seeing DeFran come out map 1 on Ilias Well on Torbjorn was, like, the most fitting moment of Overwatch League history. Like, he's playing Overwatch on his own terms, and, like, he's just... there's nothing you can do about it, and everyone loved to see it.
And as much of a joke as it was, it also worked. Yeah. Like, it was pretty effective, because he is good at Torbjorn, yeah.
Yeah, so all in all, like, Atlanta, you know, they looked good. The front line has been looking pretty solid. Again, that's another tank duo that came over from Contenders Korea, so we kind of expected that from them.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's really just a matter of shoring up that support line, because that really was, like, the weak spot on them. But, you know, as you mentioned, Mazah kind of across the board, at least with the Lucio play, him and Big Goose were probably the most bloodthirsty Lucios. Same with IDK was another standout on that role from Hanzhou Spark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think it seems a lot of people were concerned about their communications because they're a pretty international roster. But it seems like they have the communication down. It's just, like you said, Dogman was getting picked off a lot. Although what I noticed a lot of the time was either if he didn't get picked off, then he'd usually get like a double or sometimes even a triple near the end of the fight when the team's already lost. So he's kind of dying early and then fragging out late when it's way too late. So I definitely think I'd love to see more Kodak, not just because he's on some of my fantasy teams, but I think that he might be what Atlanta might need. But I also think Dufresne kind of talked about it on his stream a little bit, but his grabs weren't the best all the time. No. Either doing a one-man grab or missing the grab. He didn't get his grabs eaten many times, but they weren't good. So he had one really good one on Dorado, but...
I mean, is that better or worse than having them eaten? Because they're both wasted in that case.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess instead of being outplayed, it's just being bad, which I don't know if that's any better.
Just get one. That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can get value out of one.
So I'm hopeful for Atlanta. I'm impressed with Atlanta. They just need to iron out some small things. Last match I want to touch on is, we touched on it a little bit, but Seoul versus Dallas. Very impressive from Dallas. They looked like an entirely different team. OG kept saying that the first match was kind of just nerves getting back into things. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but I believe it, because it I feel like it can't be anything other than just nerves if they look that much different in one match against arguably a stronger team. Or right. Actually, not arguably a stronger team. I'd say Shock is stronger than Seoul, but so yeah, they look significantly better, and I don't know what the change is. I assume it's stress, but RCK didn't really do much in the first bit, but near the end he had some great D.Va bombs. But the most impressive to me was AKM, like we talked about before.
Right, which is something that we didn't quite expect either, just because AKM kind of, like, fell, I'm not going to say, like, out of the discussion, but there were a lot of times in Season 1 where he just wasn't an ideal fit in regards to the meta and what characters are actually in his wheelhouse. So to see him come out with the Widow and then just hit, like, was, like, 3 or 4 consecutive shots and just completely turn it to win it for Dallas Fuel was definitely a sight to see. And, you know, it even made the top plays for Overwatch League in week one, which is nice to see.
Yeah. And it's nice to see Effect again. And not only to see him, but to see him happy. He was laughing a lot of the time. It was nice to see him. He did have some bad grabs. I know there was one on Horizon where it hit the post. I don't want to fully blame him for that because things happen. But, I mean... probably one step to the left would have avoided that mistake, but good to see him back and happy. So those were the matches for the week. I thought it was... I didn't expect to be watching all of them, but I watched almost 6 to 8 hours a day, which is way too much. I went and visited my family because we had Monday off, and I visited my family, and I was kind of just watching Overwatch for Saturday and Sunday. So... felt kind of bad for them. But who would you say are the standout players or the surprise teams if you had to say, we'll say three standout players?
Well, you know, I actually wrote down 4.
Okay, then we'll do 4. We'll do 4 because I have 5.
Okay, so my standout players for the week, 2 of them are from the Hanzhou Spark. I went with No Smite and IDK. I'll go into detail a little bit after. So for... my other stand-up players, I had Izayaki from the LA Valiant, who was their flex support, and then Nene from New York Excelsior, who's their flex DPS. I was blown away by how much we actually got to see out of Nene, because I was not expecting to see him as much as we were, but boy am I glad that we did, because I was sick and tired of all the hype behind Flower getting signed to the Overwatch League after he was basically like the afterthought on that team, and a lot of that was just due to what Nene was doing on XL2 Academy. So Nene is definitely in the discussion for Rookie of the Year, and I'm expecting a level of consistency from him, whether it is on the Zarya, because he does get to play that quite a bit, or on some of these other roles. And as I mentioned earlier, Izzy from the Valiant, while yes, the Valiant did lose their series to the Spark, which was a very close series, Izzy was probably the most terrifying Zenyatta fragger out of the entire league in week one.
Mm.
And this is a person that they have had a lot of stock in. You know, we had the question of, well, what's going on with Kareev? Is he going to be playing support, or is he moving back to DPS? We got our answer. He's on DPS, which I'm happy to see. So he's definitely going to be like the jack of all trades for the Valiant.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's just, well, if Kuki's starting over Custa, how much does that actually hamper their abilities on the team? But it definitely opened up opportunities for Izzy, and I expect that to continue. But for me, No Smite was hands down the player of the week. And, you know, really with Hanzo, you could have gone with No Smite, IDK, or Rhea.
Yeah.
Because Rhea probably had the best bombs out of everyone outside of, like, the Grav Shatter bomb that we saw out of New York on Rialto.
Yeah.
So you had IDK, who's their Lucio player. And I remember he had a really good stall on Temple of Anubis Point B. That was fantastic, and he was very aggressive with his approach, looking for the boops, just looking to land the headshots, which you really don't expect from Lucio players in the Overwatch League. And then with No Smite, kind of bringing it back to the LA Valiant versus Hanzo Spark series, No Smite was just all over Fate in that series. Fate was playing scared throughout the entirety of that series, and it just got to the point where you had No Smite, who was basically building like 80% or 80% of his ultimate on every single fight, which you just don't expect. So, you know, we kind of questioned, well, what tank line are we going to see out of the Spark? Is it going to be that X6 Gaming tank duo of No Smite and Rhea? Are we going to see Gu Shui? And we got to see a little bit of both, but No Smite, he plays that reactive style of Reinhardt, so he's just looking for any opening that he can find, and it worked great. Now, a lot of other Reinhardts might try to, you know, use that playstyle, and they're just not going to find the same amount of success.
Yeah.
And now, when you have a main tank as good as Fate, who is widely considered like a top three main tank in the Overwatch League, playing on his back foot throughout the entire series, you know, he constantly had that thought in the back of his mind, like, okay, like, No Smite is gonna have his Urshatter ready, I need to make sure that I block this.
Yeah.
And he couldn't do that. There was too much pressure on the front line, not necessarily from No Smite, but the fact that they were losing a shield battle in a vast majority of the situations just made it to the point where Valiant was not able to get that clean sort of entry. And then whenever Fate would drop in Urshatter, you had No Smite blocking them. So it was like a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
So with Gu Shui, I know he saw like 40 minutes of play, something like that, and his Winston is definitely going to be the primary focus, and it was great and also terrible, depending on what map. So the biggest strength from Gu Shui was his usage of Primal Rage. You know, he's doing a lot of disruption. He was finalizing a lot of kills when he was dying from the backline. We got to see him punt a lot of people off on Numbani. But then there are also times where he'd be a bit too over-aggressive, or like the tank dive would come out a little bit too late, which they kind of got punished on point A of Numbani. So I feel like, you know, Gu Shui's still going to see play, but his Winston needs to find that sort of, he either needs to, like, just jump the back line and then get out, or just play a bit more passively, because he was getting punished a little bit too much. But No Smite was just on another level this past week.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Hangzhou Spark, I guess, would be your standout team, then, from the week.
I would say them and Paris were the teams that kind of took me back the most, I'd say.
All right. So my players, my standout players of the week, I have five, are Fusions first, mainly because it was such a quick change of him being a two-way player and then all of a sudden being just straight on the main roster. And he kind of had no contest against the tanks that he was playing against. He was just able to punish them over and over again. Now, you were talking about how Gushue is much better on Winston than he is Reinhardt. I feel like with fusions, he's pretty much a Reinhardt player. So if the meta does change, I doubt it's ever going to go back to dive, at least not anytime soon. But if it did do something like that, I don't know if fusions would be able to hold up. But yeah, he impressed me in the first game, and then in the second game, I was checking to see if it was just kind of a good game for him, and then it turns out he was good in both games. So yeah, he really impressed me. Next, I have Super, who also impressed me, because I didn't think I'd see him at all. And then he came out and was very good. Like I said, Shock's cycle seems to be good, just cycling people out. I don't know whether it's map-based or hero-based, but they've got something figured out, and it seems to be working for them. And Super was... I could hear his voice in my head whenever he'd pull off a play, that high-pitched yell. So that was nice to see. And then I have Massa down as well, because he... I don't want to say he carried Atlanta, but he definitely saved Atlanta multiple times. Mm-hmm. So I'd say he's... If I had to choose one, I'd probably say Massa was my most... I was most impressed with him, or surprised by him this week. AKM, we've talked already about, so I'm not gonna talk about that. But I do want to talk a bit about Dufran, because he was a standout, not just because the desk wouldn't stop talking about him, but I was talking to some people on the competitive Overwatch subreddit before the week started, and people were talking about Dufran, saying he was going to ride the bench and not get any play time, and if he did, it was just going to be one map so that people would be able to see him, but then he'd be out of there. And I didn't understand that mindset, and he played every map because he's one of, if not the most mechanically gifted player, at least in the West. And we saw that, being able to play Torbjorn and Zarya, and I think he only played Torb and Zarya, if I'm remembering correctly, but... if Soldier ever comes, obviously... Oh, no, he played a lot of Tracer, too. He played some Tracer. But, yeah, he definitely impressed, not only on the Torbjorn, but playing Zarya, his tracking is unbelievable. There were many times where he also saved Atlanta. So I think if Dufran can stick with it, and I think he can, I think that he'll be... one of the standout players of the season. A lot of the talent team were saying that he might be rookie of the year or MVP of the season, but if he makes it, but you know, we'll just have to wait and see. It feels weird calling Dufran a rookie, but you know, we'll see.
Well, I mean, it's rookie in the sense that he's new to the Overwatch League and he doesn't have the level land experience that a lot of these other players have.
Yeah. Now, I have one last thing I want to talk about before we go. I have an MVP problem. I have a problem with the way they're giving out MVPs. It seems like, at least, maybe it's just because it's the first week, but a lot of the MVPs are going out to the big names rather than who actually deserves the MVP. Two examples are Jonak got it instead of Mecco in the match versus Boston, because Mecco did insanely well that game, and honestly, Aim God put up a good fight against Jonak for being the better Zen that game. I think Jonak was still the better Zen that game, but Aim God did very well. So I feel like they just gave it to Jonak because it was like, hey guys, we're back. It's the Overwatch League. Remember Jonak? And that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, rubbed some people online the wrong way. And then same with the match against Atlanta. They gave it to Carpe instead of Sado. When, even though Carpe did well because he's Carpe, I felt like he was getting somewhat outplayed a lot of the time. Or not a lot of the time, but a decent amount. It wasn't like he was... you know, a standout player from that match, but they gave it to Carpe instead of Sato, who was constantly shutting Atlanta down. So I hope they don't keep up this trend. I'm hoping it's just a week one thing where they just want to give it to the big names. But yeah, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Well, if that was true, then you should have had Surefire get in the player of the match just for bringing out Symmetra in the Overwatch League and beating Mooma to the punch.
Yeah.
See, like, you know, I'm kind of like middle of the ground with that, just because, like, I look at it kind of like the play of the game aspect. Like, there are going to be times where there's a really great play and then someone else is going to get it, whether it's like the pity type of play of the game or it was another good play.
Yeah.
You know, it's just we don't know what the metrics are in regards to how they pick the player of the match. Yeah. You know, it might just be based on maybe one strong performance in one of the maps. We don't know if it's like a level of consistency throughout the entirety of the match. We just don't know. So, like, I'm not going to, like, hold a gripe, so to speak, if someone that I'm not a fan of actually gets the vote over, you know, one of the other standout players at the moment. But you can make an argument, like, they kind of go for the household name. And I think it's just going to be a bigger issue if that translates to the MVP at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Because that's really when it's more, I'm not going to say, like, it's more up in the air, so to speak, but we can see a lot more variety in who's actually going to be in the discussion at that point.
Yeah. I know we talked about, or Calder and I talked a lot about the MVP last season and how there were a lot of nominees going around, a lot of names going around. But when Jonak won, it just seemed right. It was like, it seemed like if anybody else had won, we kind of would have been like, yeah, but I don't know, Jonak probably should have won it. So that was definitely right that season. But I really hope that, you know, they don't take popularity into account, which is why I kind of like laughed a bit about DeFran getting the MVP. Because even though he is very good, and maybe he will get MVP, but if he did, just based on what we've seen so far, I feel like it would just be because he's the fan favorite. Mm-hmm. Which is why I think maybe they should have a fan favorite award that's separate, which I've been saying they should have for the World Cup forever, because I know 2 years ago XQC won it when obviously he wasn't the MVP of that. And then this season, or this year in the World Cup, Jonak won it, even though XQC obviously got the most votes. So it's like, either you rig the system or you ignore the system. But yeah,
there's no middle ground.
Yeah, so I feel like just a completely separate award would be nice, just to change things. I do like the way they did MVP last season, where it was like, I think 25% was a public vote. Right. Yeah, I think that's a smart way to do it. But yeah, anyway, I just wanted to talk about that because it kind of bugged me on the broadcast. Hopefully they, I mean, they don't have to change anything, but hopefully they just give it to people who deserve it. Every player that they give it to, I'm sure, is good and deserves it somewhat, but you know, we all have our opinions.
Right.
Anyway, that's kind of all I've got. Do you have anything else about the week you want to talk about?
I do want to touch up really quick on some of the tech issues that we kind of went through in opening week, because that was another big discussion point within the community. You know, they were having a lot of issues with, like, the player point of views in the command center. And, you know, there was a lot of pauses, a lot more than what we would be used to. And, you know, we don't really know, like, what the layoffs kind of, like, impacted when it comes to, like, the esports side of Overwatch League, especially on production. So, like, you know, early on, you know, it seems like it's pretty shaky. Mm-hmm. But I imagine, you know, they're still kind of, like, working out the kinks. So I expect a better kind of, like, viewing experience basically across the board. But for them to, like, launch the All Access Pass with the player point of view kind of, like, being the focal point of it, for that to kind of just be a crapshoot, because, like, I know when I try to use it, I would just, like, lag out in that stream, where every single frame was just jittery beyond belief, and it was just unusable. And then I just didn't go back to the command center the rest of the week. Or there were times when you were on the command center, it would, like, randomly just stop working, and you would have to refresh the page, and that happened a number of times. So I will say, like, it wasn't the best first look from a tech standpoint, but I feel like we're getting a better look as the season progresses, and hopefully next week all of the kinks will be worked out. But I wasn't one of those people that was like throwing my, you know, keyboard across the room because I couldn't use the command center. But, you know, I love having the top-down view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was something that we've been wanting, and it definitely helps set up the plays. And just, it helps newer viewers kind of get a better understanding of how, you know, these players are kind of going about playing the game and setting up these either compositions or taking a high ground approach, you know, things like that.
Yeah. And another kind of technical issue, I don't know how connected it is, but a lot of people weren't getting their Overwatch League tokens for yes. a long time. I think pretty much everybody just got kind of an abundance of tokens on Saturday and Sunday. I know I just got a random 65 token drop on Sunday, and mm-hmm. I guess that was kind of just my weekend's credits. But yeah, hopefully they've got that figured out now. It seems like they do. And then also, it kind of sucked for when Bren had his grand entrance. Apparently his mic wasn't working in the studio, so that's why nobody cheered.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because everyone was yelling that the mic was off, which is why when he points out that AKM was playing Sombra, everybody cheers, and it's like, I mean, that's kind of just a basic knowledge thing, but apparently they were cheering because the mic was finally fixed. But hopefully they figure that kind of stuff out. I had one more thing. Oh, yeah. How do you feel about there not really being a desk anymore? They kind of have those stand-up bits.
Yeah, okay. So here's the thing. When we kind of look at the game flow right now, we're already sitting at over 8 hours of Overwatch every day for Overwatch League. And I don't get me wrong, I love the analytical approach of the desk and some of the funny things that we could see, you know, and it is a bit of a loss, but if you bring that stuff back, that means we're going to get, like, longer waits in between matches on halftime, and then you're basically adding, like, another 15, possibly 20 minutes onto the broadcast in what's already something that's 8 to 9 hours long, so I'm not up in arms about it. I understand from a broadcast perspective why they kind of cut it out, because it does kind of help the flow where, you know, we're only having like a minute and a half to like 3 minute breaks. So there's a lot less downtime in between everything, which I definitely feel is a lot better for just the overall viewing experience. But really, it's just a matter of, is that sort of pace what's causing the amount of tech issues that we have been seeing yeah. with the game pauses? Because I feel like those are hand in hand because they're constantly having to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree that not having the desk there definitely speeds things up. And a lot of people were saying they look really uncomfortable just standing there, full body shots, but they'll get better at that, I'm sure. And I guess they kind of make up for not having a desk by having a watch point at the beginning and end of every show. So if anybody really wants the desk segments, they can always just tune into those. So yeah, I have no real problem with it. I know some people were complaining about it, but I think it's fine. And I think that is all. I don't know how long the show has been. I didn't look at the clock before we started, but hopefully it's not overly long, not overly short. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate it. Be sure to check the description for all of Totally Drunk's links for the Overwatch League Network show, Overwatch League Recall, Overwatch League by the Numbers. Am I missing any?
So it's Heroes Never Die, which is a variety show that airs Wednesday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time. There, that's like a two-hour show, so forewarning, because we cover like all aspects of Overwatch. Overwatch League Network is Mondays at 7 p.m. Pacific time. OWL by the Numbers, which is our fantasy Overwatch League, which, you know, you're a part of,
which I am
with our league. Yeah. That is at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And then Overwatch Recall is like kind of like our content creator interview series, which we don't record that one live. That's more flex schedule, and that's been kind of sporadic. But, you know, I know we've had a number of podcasts on there, you know, you guys included. So it's really just a great experience talking to other content creators, and you know, like, it leads to us doing other stuff like the Fantasy League, guesting on other podcasts with one another, which is fantastic.
Yeah. All right, awesome. So be sure to check the description for all of those. Be sure to also check the description for all of Calder and my social links. Check out our website for articles and social links as well. Go play some Overwatch. Try to avoid Reaper as much as possible. And we will catch you guys next time. Have a good one.